Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Yarnstown, Maryland.
No, that's okay. Not where it was, Tim.
Where was it,
Tim? The last time was at a market, a fruit market, in up towards Poolsville, up that way.
Yeah.
And
people are loving this all over the country. Yes.
Yeah, this is really great radio. And I had potatoes in my hand.
That's right.
Potatoes! If you like potatoes, you win.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
There is the possibility every once in a while that this show is so localized. not by area, but I always felt in doing this show, and I felt this on the radio show, and so I certainly feel it here, that if you don't get the jokes because you weren't here for the last 20 years, I don't have to explain them to you. But I think I do. Sometimes I think I do.
Sometimes we may
have to. Like when we have a guest, we just introduce him once. You know, we just say at the beginning, it's Tim Kirchner. And then he goes on 12, 14 minutes, and he's talking about potatoes. And I think people go, what is this? Why is this happening? We are live at Chatter. We have a very nice crowd for breakfast. Thank you for coming. We're giving away ties today because people are sending us big boxes of ties.
Yes.
We're at the corner. We're in Friendship Heights in the district. We're at the corner of Jennifer Street Northwest and Wisconsin Avenue Northwest. I'm going on spring break. I get a spring break. I'm going to go play golf. So
hey.
I'm going to be gone tomorrow and then next week and then come back. And a lot of times people are talking about the summer and what we're going to do during the summer and when you're not here during the summer. This year we're going to be here. We're going to be here a lot more often in the summer, but what I think we might do in the summer is do the podcast in the early evening.
Okay.
You know, do the podcast in the early evening and thereby get a crowd to come to the restaurant and not just have breakfast, but have dinner or something
like that. Can we ever do it from Dewey?
No.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
That'd be fun.
I'm sorry, Luke. Because I don't know that we have the equipment. But if we did it from Dewey, we would do it from Rehoboth. We'd do it from the kitchen.
Yeah. Some like orange crushes or something. That'd be a lot of fun in doing.
We don't need a phone line.
Michael is here. We don't need, what do you need?
Well, I'm just saying if it's four or five people around your kitchen table.
Yeah.
We would just need a couple of...
We need equipment.
We need microphones and a couple of pieces of equipment.
Well, we could do that.
Yeah, we could probably figure that out. Computer.
We could do that. Nigel will run the board. Nigel will do news. Let me get to some of the letters. Dear Dr. Hoff Waff, birthdays, weddings, and golf outings, but have any littles invited you to a Nats game? I am headed to town... to D.C. on April 7th for the Mets-Nats game. Would love for you to join. Now, we're not going to be here April 7th. I'm not promising solicit seats, but how often do you get the chance to see the team of your youth against the team of your... Oh, well. I'll even use SeatGeek to save $20 and set up a car service to take you to Nationals Park. That's really nice. That's tempting. I'm not going to be here, though. I would also like to throw my hat in the ring to be the official ballpark consultant of the Tony Kornheiser Show. To date, I've attended games in 39 ballparks across MLB. Loy Little and sugar cookie extraordinaire Claire Natola can verify that I know ballparks as well as you know the Rascals, who are, of course, Felix Cavalieri, Eddie Brigati, Gene Cornish, and Dino Danelli. All the best, Anthony Lorenzo. And he sent some cards. I haven't looked at baseball cards in a long time. This is for Bootsy's collection to start.
Oh, look at that.
These are lovely. But there's a but here. Well, one, I got a Jason Worth card.
He's Blake Treinen?
No longer. No,
number 45.
But they only give you the last 5 years of somebody's career, and then at the bottom, they give you major league totals. They're, you know.
Oh, it used to be you would get
everything.
Yeah. If you like got Charlie Huff's baseball card was literally like four pages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is new. Luke, pass those over to Michael to give to Bootsy. That's very, very nice. We have here. The woman to whom I will soon be related by marriage rolled her eyes so hard into the back of her head when I asked if I could send an invitation to my favorite podcast that I'm pretty sure I saw her hair move. I had flashbacks to the classic Dick Van Dyke episode with all those walnuts. Well, I have no doubt the bigs will get that reference. I've alienated about half of the littles. I would like to invite the entire crew to my wedding. I have no expectations that any of you will actually make the trek to New Jersey, as there will be no Johnny Blue, and I'm pretty sure the hotel is not even a one-bathroom situation, let alone two. But the reception is right down the road from the Stone Pony. In reality, the only reason I sent this is so I could say eat it to fellow littles who will be attending, which includes Hands, Little T, and Bear, among others. This is Britton Milner. He is marrying Dina Greca, That's the 14th of April, a very important date in our lives in this show. And this is going to be in Tinton Falls, New Jersey.
In the Stone Pony, if you're a Springsteen diehard, that's the
right.
Taj Mahal. That's
but right.
Also, Asbury Park in the last few years has gotten really nice down there by the water. It's completely gentrified and changed. There's little boutiques and art galleries and restaurants.
This is astonishing.
It's a good place to be.
Wait, I count on you for foreign travel. I don't count on you for local travel within driving distance.
I got to tell
you. I don't count on
you. You would like Asbury Park in 2018.
I liked it fine when I was there the last time in about 1966.
But for some, you and my mother, you're aging in place. It's a good place to age.
Okay. Yeah. From Casey Gioielli in Chicago, in actual Chicago, on a Wabash College note, a bunch of Monopoly things, which you've got to stop giving me, and Cadbury mini eggs, which is very,
start
very
sending
nice.
The employee-only game
just
cards.
Don't,
just the winning
the
tickets.
Green edition.
All right, so let's get to one of the reasons that I thought we would have something to talk about today was opening day. But although it is opening day all around the country, it's not opening day in Cincinnati where the Nats are going to play. They canceled this yesterday on the threat of rain. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think this is retribution for all the Nats misses with their forecasting down at Nats Park. And this is they're doing a service for the rest of the league.
Luke, you were not going to go to the Great American Ballpark and watch the Nats open?
I have been to the Great American Ballpark. I actually, coincidentally, when I was doing some reporting for NBC in 2010, I happened to be there. I was doing some reporting on John Boehner, who's from Cincinnati.
Yes.
And I happened to be there for Chapman's first game ever. And I really liked that ballpark. It actually opens up to the river in the outfield, which is what the Nats should have done.
Yes.
Which would have been great. You could have had Anacostia Potomac River bombs, should we call them. But no, the reason why I didn't go is because I'd already been to that ballpark. Had it been somewhere else, I probably would have gone.
So this, what interests me about this is the two greatest baseball towns in America are St. Louis and Cincinnati, and they always have been. Mm-hmm. And it stunned me yesterday. I was preparing something for the PTI show to talk about whether or not either of the teams or both of the teams in Florida should just be moved somewhere else, like Montreal, because nobody goes.
Nobody goes.
Tampa Bay has the worst attendance in the league year after year after year after year. What stunned me was how close Cincinnati was to the bottom. Now, I know they've had bad squads in the past 5 to 8 years. They've had bad squads. But Cincinnati's a great baseball town, and I was surprised. They're in the bottom five every year. Does that surprise you?
That does surprise me.
Bottom five.
I mean, granted, I was there with Chapman, so it was probably a bigger game. But that's a very nice stadium. It's a nice part of town. There's a great Irish bar called O'Malley's Pub in the Alley, I believe it's called. So Cincy fans, check me on that. But they've kind of had a similar trajectory of the Nats in the last few years, right? First round exits. And then
they haven't made the anything since
then. No, not recently, but I mean like the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, they were out early.
It's a tough division to compete for these last 5 years.
Well, the Cubs are very, very good. Yeah, the Pirates were very good. The Milwaukee Brewers are getting very good. They picked up some real people. Anyway, so there were two things I wanted to talk about in the open to the show today. One is LeBron James saying the other day, he was asked the question, who would you vote for MVP? And he said, I'd vote for me. And he went on and on. They had 41 last night. Okay, this was after the game they lost where the team only scored 79 points against Miami. And he went on and on and on about how bad the team has been. And he actually used the phrase, how I kept the team afloat. I kept the team afloat. Modesty, not a virtue of LeBron James anymore. And LeBron James is, we would all agree, the best player in basketball, right?
Absolutely.
Yes?
Yeah. I mean, first pick, if yes.
Yeah. So he could be the MVP. It's like Michael Jordan.
Every year.
Like, he could be the MVP every year, and people just get tired of voting for him. So Steph Curry got it a couple of times, and Kevin Durant got it once. And Westbrook got it last year, and Harden will get it this year. But he would be the overall number one selection.
Sure.
So I was thinking, and I wonder what you think about this, that why, especially this year, LeBron has touted himself. When he's had very big point games, he says, well, that's the best I can do. And he's talked about this year, this is the best I can play. And he hasn't missed any games. He used to take 10 days off in the middle of the
season. Spring break.
To go to Miami and lay outside while his team played in the cold somewhere. He didn't care. That was to regenerate.
Right.
This year, working with, and it's similar to the Tom Brady circumstance, working with a trainer, a medical group that's not the team's, but getting great results. Great results. So I thought that he's not even talking to the person who asked that question. I think he's talking to Michael Jordan. I think that everything LeBron James says now is to say to Michael Jordan essentially this. It's just you and me. It's us. The last 30 years in basketball, it's just you and me. And I know I won't get 6 titles. I get that. But it's just you and me. We're the best.
I'll take it a step further. I think this is the time of year where traditionally we see LeBron come up with some sort of mental game, if you will.
Yes.
He unfollows the team on Instagram and Twitter back in the past.
Right.
This to me is this sort of, okay, how am I going to motivate myself for these playoffs where a lot of people are picking us 3 in the East where we're going to fall, but we might not be able to get past Boston. People don't think we can get past Toronto. The Wizards might give us a series in the first round, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is the, I don't get enough respect. You have to know who I am. I'm LeBron effing James.
Yeah.
I'm playing the entire season at age 33. I'm my
15th season. With incredible
season,
tread on my tires.
With
on my
incredible
tires.
Tread. And the other person I think he's talking to, aside from MJ, which you're absolutely correct, is Dan Gilbert. Dan.
Who he hates.
Who I hate you, but you better know. You better pay me out. If you want me back, you better pay, and you better pay the people around me, and you better get the coach that I want, or just make me coach.
Tyronn Lue hasn't – they haven't missed, and they're not going to miss Tyronn Lue.
Because he's not really the coach of the
team. No, LeBron James is the coach and the general manager
exactly.
of the team.
I mean, so, was Paul Silas the coach of the Cavs when LeBron was 20?
And LeBron
19?
Didn't listen
no,
to him.
He wasn't. Yeah. I mean,
and he's
point.
A great player.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah, you know, they didn't listen to him.
I totally agree with you on the MJ dialogue.
Who's talking to?
I think he's really just having an internal monologue at this point. He's already looking past MJ. And what struck me about his comments was, I want to change the narrative on what it means to be a 15-year vet, because that's only something that I can do.
Yeah.
And if you look at the numbers this year, points similar to that MVP run from 08 to 2013 or so, up slightly in assists and rebounds, which you would not think, given when he has to carry the team and score basically all the points. And I think that's where he's looking at just this internal piece of, I have blinders on. I'm not even looking at what Harden's doing, across the street. And MJ, I'm already looking behind at him in the mirrors.
I think this is I think everything he talks about is sort of legacy talk now for LeBron James. And which brings me to Johnny Manziel, who was an enormous, enormous star in college. He was the most exciting quarterback I ever saw in college. And then he, something happened to him. He quite possibly had a drug addiction, and he quite possibly had a personality disorder, which is what he talks about now. And he failed miserably in Cleveland, and he really did. But the question becomes, did he fail because he was a bad quarterback, or did he fail because of this personality stuff? Because when you hear him talk now, he sounds very different. He sounds completely committed to a straight line to get back into football and support of family, which he used to not deal with at all. He ran away from family. So
totally alienated with his father, right?
If he's a different person and still the same quarterback, is he NFL material? The Patriots have apparently expressed interest in him. The Patriots. Now, the Patriots do this a lot. The Patriots take people, and sometimes it fails, like Albert Haynesworth.
Right.
But sometimes it succeeds, like LeGarrette Blount. I mean, they'll take somebody problematic. Randy Moss. He had the greatest. They didn't win. They didn't win at all. He had the greatest year of his life, and he's a Hall of Famer with Tom Brady. What, you guys are so much younger than I, so much closer to Johnny Manziel. Mm. What do you see when you see him now?
Well, he was always, I think, the best of the joystick video game quarterbacks, right, in college. And if you sort of put Michael Vick up there as the apotheosis of the joystick quarterback, then I would put Johnny Manziel right there, and then they translate that to the NFL. The best to do it is probably Vick and then Russell Wilson, to be honest with you. There's really not a long track record of success. But I would take this a step higher. I think culturally, this is very bad for the NFL because it essentially validates everything that Kaepernick has said and the critics of the NFL have said as well, which is that to be a black man in the NFL, you have to do things at such a higher rate of acceptance than if you're white. Here's a guy like Johnny Manziel who threw away his opportunity.
Oh, absolutely.
Got caught in Vegas when he was supposed to be in concussion protocol, got caught with drugs, oversleeping practice. Here's a guy, Kaepernick, who went to a Super Bowl, didn't do anything illegal, and simply stood up for social justice.
Right.
He can't get an interview.
Right.
And Manziel apparently has the best team in the league trying to bring him in. So if he comes in, he probably gets a year-long suspension. But if the NFL allows him to come in, because I personally think that Kaepernick was blackballed, I think the NFL behind the scenes, if I was Goodell, I would try and stop this. Because it's going to be really bad fallout from the African-American community and honestly anyone who's woke, shall we say.
Do you think the Patriots... See, I think the Patriots are distinct from every other team in the NFL. And I think if the Patriots had found value in Colin Kaepernick, regardless of what he had done on the sidelines, I think they would have signed him.
Maybe, but they didn't, and it's how it appears.
Well,
right?
To this particular point, to the personnel point, what surprises me most about this, because let's use Kaepernick, he's a Kaepernick quarterback.
Yeah.
Tom Brady is the least Kaepernick-like quarterback, Manziel-like quarterback, Russell Wilson-like quarterback in the league. If you put him out there, you'd have to change your entire offensive line. That's what struck me as so weird, that Johnny Manziel for that team.
Yeah.
Although that team does weird things. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, beyond even his ability to potentially compete for an NFL job, I just look at the immense amount of privilege that exists in his life. If I think about socially the fact that he had this fall and he had the security and system in place to protect him and he had the wherewithal to look to family and he's now able to rise up so quickly.
What's 3 years?
That's
3 years.
That's
and he
pretty
became a laughing
for somebody,
stock.
Forget the laughing stock. For somebody who was suffering from substance abuse issues, I think at his age and just his lifestyle, I don't think I can go to addiction at this point. But the fact that he had those systems in place just speaks to the privilege around him that would not necessarily be available to a lot of other fallen
players. Yeah, Maurice Claret, Lawrence Phillips. You don't see it at that level.
Well, am I wrong on Lawrence Phillips? Didn't he commit, like, battery?
Well,
when this originally occurred.
Yes.
That's different.
Yes.
I would make a distinction. with him. All right,
we got to brush up on our Nebraska 95 title team. Criminal. Yeah. There are a lot of criminals on that team.
Call Warren Buffett because he goes 8 deep on the depth chart.
That's really good.
Nebraska football. Yeah. We'll take a break. Deep.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Blue Apron, Reed. Blue Apron is the leading meal kit delivery service in the United States. And while many people know what they do, many don't know about the type of meals you eat when you cook with Blue Apron. And I'm going to mispronounce this. Like quick bucatini with broccoli and pecorino cheese and Italian-style shrimp and sweet pepper. With incredible ingredients and chef-designed recipes, Blue Apron lets you see what the power of food can do. It delivers fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door that can be cooked in under 45 minutes. The menu changes every week based on what's in season, and it is designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. Blue Apron offers 12 new recipes each week. Customers can pick 2, 3, or 4 recipes depending on what best fits their schedule. And Blue Apron sends only non-GMO ingredients with meat that has no added hormones. Blue Apron is treating listeners to this high-quality podcast to $30 off your first order if you visit blueapron.com/TonyK. So check out this week's menu. Get $30 off at blueapron.com/TonyK. Blue Apron, it is a better way to cook.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This comes to us from Pastor Jim Croninger in Ellijay, Georgia, who writes, "This past weekend, I had the special privilege of conducting the marriage ceremony for my daughter Allison and her now husband, Bandy Fuller. In the past, you've played Bandy's music on the podcast. This particular song, entitled Breathless, was one that he wrote for my daughter while they were dating. As a longtime little, it would be great to hear you mention their names and wish them well as they begin their lives together, which we can do. And we can also mention that Marcus Nolan, who's in the crowd today, is having a birthday.
Oh, happy birthday,
so
Marcus.
So we're happy.
It's
for
a lovely name.
Yes, it is.
Marcus.
Yes, it is. Mike Freeman of Bleacher Report joins us now. I wanted to get Freeman on just because of this, what I think is potentially an earth-shaking NFL rule change having to do, I'm going to have to close the door a little bit, having to do not so much with helmet to helmet, but Mike, helmet to anything. Helmet to anything. You're going to get a 15-yard penalty if you lead with your head, which all running backs do when they're about to be tackled. You can be thrown out of the game, I guess, if it's considered truly egregious. What? How did this come about, and what do you make of it?
Tony, always good to be with you. It's really one of the most significant changes NFL's made on the field in decades.
I agree.
And I don't think people fully understand the impact this is going to have on the game. It's going to change in a lot of ways how the game is played, how it looks. The games are going to be longer. There's going to be more delays. The NFL says it's still sort of working out how the rule is going to go, but it's going to look something like college, which is just a awful, putrid rule in college. I mean, it's terrible because guys get thrown out of the game over decisions that are made in milliseconds. And that's what you're going to see in the NFL. The refs already have a hard time. They're like, half the refs can't keep up with the speed of the game now. And so now you're going to have this rule where a helmet-to-helmet hit or a helmet lowering your head or however the NFL is going to phrase this. But I think it's going to end up looking a lot like college. And now the refs have to manage that. And the thing about this rule, Tony, is it's really not necessary because players don't really use their heads the way they did. Like, it's not the 1970s. They don't use their helmets as weapons anymore.
Well, that's exactly what Rich McKay said, the director of the competition committee, that he felt that players were using their heads as weapons. I think defensive backs do it all the time. I think that running backs do it all the time. You watch a lot more football than I do, but I think this is a rule that is aimed specifically at concussions and CTE. This is a rule to keep football alive to the general public who sees it now as the beginnings of slaughter, and I guess you disagree with that.
No, I think you, a couple things you said are dead on. My point is that I don't, Rich McKay is a longtime football guy that we respect. He's really smart. He's good at what he does and has been for a long time. I just disagree that the football that I see, I don't see them using their heads the way that the league says. That's just me.
Uh-huh.
I don't see it that way. But you're right about the other part of this, which is I think the rule is aimed more at PR. The league sees what a lot of people see. It hasn't necessarily directed hit the ratings yet, but the league sees that some people look at this sport and see they have a better understanding of what it does to the mind, and they don't want to watch it. So the league is trying to use this to head that off, but this doesn't stop CTE in any way. And I just don't see a whole lot of those type of hits that this rule is aimed at stopping. It's more of a PR rule than it is a rule that will actually do anything on the field, to me.
What is interesting to me is this is universally being condemned by players because it's not the way that players are feeling. You're taking the way we play the game. By the same token, repeated hits with your head, I don't think you can get a safe helmet. Repeated hits with your head increase the likelihood of concussions, increase the likelihood of CTE, and it's like players are almost acting absolutely against their best interests because it's the way they play the game. I really think that this year, and however long this rule lasts, I think that we're going to see, I agree with you, we're going to see games that take forever that everybody's angry at, that the players are angry at, you know?
Yes. You hit on, I think, one of the main problems. A lot of these, when you look at how it happens in college, and it'll happen even more in the NFL, they play so fast that the decision of where you put your helmet when you're trying to make a tackle is such a quick split-second decision.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of times with these rules, these targeting rules, it's just accidental. It's just part of the game. So you don't necessarily use your head as a weapon. It's just you're trying to make a tackle and you lower it instinctively. So you're going to see key players at key moments in games get thrown out of the game.
Yes.
And it's going to be chaos. It's going to be crazy. And I'm telling you, Tony, the refs just are not equipped to handle this. It's just, they're just not. No one is.
The one thing I like about the rule, Mike, and I do like this, it's an equal opportunity rule. It'll be offense and defense. You know, it's like,
that's true.
I nobody can complain that, oh, they're taking defense out of the game because offensive players do the same thing. I like that about it. And if I'm not mistaken, and you would know better than I, the owners did this. The owners pushed for this. It was recommended as a point of emphasis, and then it became an actual rule. And I think, Mike, they did that because the owners do look at sagging ratings.
And they went further. The owners.
Yes, they went further because they're worried. Mike, I think they're worried about their investments short-term and long-term. I do.
Yes. Yeah. And it happened. The rule happened very quickly. Normally, the rules are sort of very publicly talked about before the league meetings. This one was not part of the league agenda. It started at the combine very quietly. People on the competition committee sort of honed it out. And the owners, you're right, the owners were fully on board. Because Tony, as we kind of discussed, and this is sort of the most important point of all of this, besides the fact that when you watch football next year, it will look a little different, is how the league fully grasps more than anyone that there's a significant number of people who watch the sport and know the science and go, I'm not watching.
Yes. Yeah.
So the owners know this, and the owners say, all right, let's try to avoid that. And for me, there are people who are going to love this rule. I think you like it. I like parts of it. But I also know that some of this is public relations. It doesn't really – what the players I spoke to yesterday about this said – they hate it because there's a part of the sport that's just uncontrollable, that you can't legislate the safety into it. It's just part of it is just barbaric.
Right.
That's just the way it is. And when you do these type of rules, you don't necessarily end the barbarism, but you make the game more difficult for them to play. So that's sort of their biggest complaint.
Well, I think you're going to see a ton. I mean, unless they say that there is no appealing these decisions, you're going to see the challenge flag on every play. I suspect that they will say there's no appeal, and then players and coaches will go insane. They will go insane, right?
Coaches are going to hate this.
Yes, they'll go insane.
Here's the other thing about this topic. I think it's only a matter of time before you see the elimination of the kickoff. The NFL is taking the image of the sport more serious than it ever has before, and that's saying something about a league that cares about its image more than anything. They see that they see kickoffs and they see the collision on the kickoffs. They're going to try and move that at some point very soon. You have this rule. The sport is undergoing right before our eyes some
transformation,
very, very significant changes. Yeah,
100%. Because somebody is saying, "Look, we let kids play. Now kids play that concept of heads up football." They're not, they're not.
There's
they're being
no
taught
thing.
Differently. Well, they're being. People are trying to teach them differently, and so when you get into the pros, 10 years from now, players may be different. But the players who are in the pros now are gonna go crazy about this, right? You'll hear this day after day after day, Mike.
What's a guy like Josh Norman do?
I don't know what Josh Norman does. I don't DBs.
What do they do?
I don't know what they do. What do you think, Mike?
They're already going crazy.
Yeah.
They're going nuts now talking about this. Josh Norman, Richard Sherman.
Well, Richard Sherman hates everything. That's why I like Richard Sherman. He hates everything.
Yeah, he hates everything.
Did you can't yeah. do anything that Richard Sherman doesn't hate.
Especially if it comes from Goodell.
Yeah, just, really it's Goodell, it's simply amazing.
There's a great email that Sherman wrote to his floor in when he was at Stanford because people were being loud. I just Google Richard Sherman Stanford floor email. It's hysterical.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
He calls out all of the kids on his floor for being too loud. And
he hates everything.
It's great.
Thank God for him, though. I like him.
I don't know that I would like him if I had to deal with him every day, but I like him. Speaking of which, I'll get you one football question. The Los Angeles Rams, in an attempt to win right now, which is smart. I wish basketball teams did that or baseball teams, and not all of them do. Los Angeles Rams have picked up Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters, and Ndamukong Suh, all of whom are Pro Bowl talented players, and all of whom have been suspended either by their teams or the league. Rule number one, do not let them locker together in one corner of the room. But what do you think, Mike? Are you taking on too much when you do that?
And maybe Beckham.
And maybe Odell Beckham, yeah.
So Bill Plaschke had the line that I love. He called them the Legion of Goons, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
You're taking a huge risk, but I think it's a risk worth taking because that locker room is really solid. If you've ever been in there and
have not,
it's a very sort of cohesive unit that I think can handle any type of personality. And that coach is the same way. He's very good at handling that type of thing. But there's no question it's a big risk, but it's worth it. I mean, Sue is a beast. You put him next to Aaron Donald. That's like almost unfair. Peters is a really talented player. Talib is a future Hall of Famer who can still play. They didn't get guys in the last year of their NFL lives who can't play anymore and are struggling. Talib can still play, Sue can still play, and Peters is young. They add these guys to a mix of already a highly talented team that has Todd Gurley on it. It's a risk worth taking, and they're going to be a force. And it's funny that division now turns into an arms race between the Niners and them.
Yes.
And it's going to be really fun division to watch with the Seahawks also. It's fun. I mean, that division is going to be like the NFC East when we were back in the day covering the NFC East of the 80s and the 90s where you had the Giants and Washington and Philly, and that's what it's going to be like now in the NFC West.
It's
going to be fun to watch, but I think they can handle it.
Do you think that Beckham will end up, if not with the Rams, on another team other than the Giants?
The odds are he stays with the Giants, but there's the root of all of this is the Giants are just irritated with him, but they just don't
really
get it. And they don't see why, they don't know if they can trust him with the kind of money that he's going to command. He's going to be the highest paid receiver in football on his next contract.
Right.
So if you're the Giants and you see some of the stuff he does, can you trust him with that? To me, he hasn't been arrested. He hasn't done anything crazy. He does some really knuckleheaded stuff. But the Giants are just completely irritated with him. But I think they're going to say, guys, we can't let him go unless someone offers a boatload for him because he's just too good. He's just... If he's gone, the Giants are wrecked. I mean, he's that much of their offense. So I think in the end he stays, but they are really mad.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for coming on short notice. Appreciate it.
Tony, live long and prosper, baby.
Mike Freeman, boys
Odell
and girls.
Beckham, a St. Albans man. Did you know that? He attended St. Albans for a year after Hurricane Katrina. He was displaced after Hurricane Katrina.
And he was here?
A seventh grade superstar at football at St. Albans. We claim him as an alum.
For 1 year, seventh grade?
Hey, he was there. He attended.
It's pretty good. We'll take a break. What do we have next? News.
News, that's right.
We have news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Dave Shinen. This is a song called Lies. And you say, wait, that Dave Shinen?
That Dave Shinen.
That Dave Shinen. What is the name of his album?
The name of the album is called First Thing Tomorrow. It is available at daveshinen.bandcamp.com. And it's Shinen spelled S-H-E-I-N-I-N.
He's a baseball writer. But he went to Vanderbilt University as a music major. And he is an opera singer as well and has done the national anthem at a variety of places. And he has my all-time admiration for releasing an album.
Yes.
It's just so cool.
Chuck Todd went to GW on a French horn scholarship.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's people that have incredible musical talent.
And you just go, wow.
In our midst. We don't even know.
I mean, this is wild. This is really good.
This is Dave Shinen.
Dave Shinen.
This is Dave Shinen.
Five-tool threat right there.
We've got to get Dave Shinen on the show. We wanted to get him on today, but he was traveling.
Yeah, he's out in the West Coast, so we'll get him when we come back.
Just had a great piece about launch angle.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have news for us? You want to do the news?
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. And it looks like Lefty Driesell is going to be in the Hall of Fame 3 months after his 86th birthday. Received word yesterday that he has been...
Yeah, this is a junior piece today.
Yeah, been elected into the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Feinstein.
We think this is long overdue, don't we?
Yes. Lefty Driesell invented basketball at the University of Maryland. He invented March Madness. Not March Madness. He invented that... The thing that starts it in the
midnight
middle of the night.
Madness.
Midnight Madness. Yes. He invented that. He was a great coach. He came to Maryland, I guess, from Davidson and loudly proclaimed that he wanted to make it the UCLA of the East. This is in the late 60s, early 70s, when UCLA was the most dominating school in basketball with John Wooden. And he never got to that height, but he really put Maryland on the map. And Lefty was the coach when Len Bias died.
Yeah.
All right, Len Bias, drafted by the Celtics, dies of a cocaine overdose, never plays a day in the NBA, and that was such a big deal. And part of this, and I remember this well, because I was working at the Washington Post in sports at that time and wrote a column the day after it happened. I watched Lefty talk about it, and I said, that's it. He's not. It's over for Lefty Driesell. Not through any fault of his own, but it's over. This is not going to work. Part of the problem for Lefty and the problem for Maryland is proximity to Washington, D.C. So every single news outlet in the country was on that story for months.
Right.
For months. And Lefty was gone shortly thereafter and contributed to his own need to go with some inopportune statements. You know, like, don't tell me about the women's center. I need a men's center. And stuff that Lefty would say that just didn't work. It just didn't work. And that led to, who's the guy from Baltimore who was here for 2 or 3 years and then replaced by Gary?
Bob Wade,
who was handpicked by John Thompson.
Adam Bubis.
The socialite with tremendous information. And then Lefty became an itinerant. And Lefty went to a variety of places and got teams into the NCAA.
Georgia State, I think, took him to the tournament.
Didn't he go to JMU for a while?
Yes.
And he did all of those things. This is, to me, this is overdue. This is overdue. I mean, he paid the price for Len Bias, for being the head coach at the time, and for not being as cooperative and apologetic, perhaps, as he should have been. That there's a large difference, for example, with the way he handled it publicly and the way Tom Izzo is handling his circumstance at Michigan State publicly, saying at all times, we just care about the survivors and things like that. And Lefty, you could not tell Lefty to do that. But this is, do we agree, Alan? Overdue.
Yes.
Overdue.
Growing up here at that time, it was so exciting.
Talk near the microphone.
Maryland was so exciting at that time. And he started off the way he started off with the games. Remember the one with Jim O'Brien with South Carolina?
Yeah.
When he won, what was the score? 31-30.
He was in one of the greatest college basketball games ever played, the 100-300 game. He had great talent. He had All-Americans all the time. In those days, you had to win the league to go to the NCAA. It was not a 64-team field. And Lefty rarely got in and never won. Never got to the Final Four,
Everyone thought Maryland had the best team in the country. They lost that game, and NC State won the national championship.
Well, NC State was great.
But they were Maryland had they David Thompson.
There were 10 pros in that game.
But Maryland had 5.
You touched on the point, though, which is, I think, for Michael and I's generation, he's just so closely intertwined with Bias and tied to it.
Yes.
And I got to be honest with you. I never necessarily had a positive opinion of him, necessarily a negative opinion of him. I just always thought of him as, the coach with Len Bias. And that's very, very tough thing to overcome.
That changed, that altered Lefty Drizel's career.
Especially because, again, culturally, I mean, that became that's when the war on drugs officially starts, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
It was a touchdown.
There was a pro football player who died of a drug overdose within one day of Len Bias. I've forgotten his name, with the Cleveland Browns. His first name was Don, and I've forgotten his last name. That was a one-day story. Len Bias was a years story. Every year after that, with Maryland, it would be, can you overcome the Len Bias circumstance? And it was...
And then there's the people that crushing. Say... Don Rogers.
Don Rogers, yes.
Yeah.
He makes the Hall of Fame. He's a Hoff.
He's a Hoff, but he's not a Woff.
He's not a Woff.
Yes, that's right.
The Woffs have been named the most recent class of Wall of Fame at the Nats ballpark has been named, and I will tell you who these people... Len Bias.
Yes.
We talked about Len Bias. Len Bias, and I totally...
Absolutely should
totally be. Totally deserving to be in there. Walt Williams, who stayed at Maryland when he could have gone.
That's right.
He stayed at Maryland and brought honor to the school. Peter Bondra of the Washington Capitals. David Poile, the general manager of the Washington Capitals. Steve Buckhance, and Luke wants to tell a Steve Buckhance story.
You're putting me on the spot here.
Steve Buckhance, the longtime voice of the Wizards.
Yes, dagger! A lot of folks will be, why are you bringing this up, Luke? But when you are a season ticket holder of the Washington Wizards, they give you this a little magazine, we'll call it, of which the Nationals have since gotten rid of and say you have to do it all digitally. And the magazine has some features about, you know, what do players like to do in Washington, who they are, where they're from. They used to give you the roster of the other team, which was very helpful. They don't do that anymore. That's supposed to be on your iPhone. But I want to look down what the roster is because you don't know half the players in the NBA now because everyone's drafted on potential. All that being said, though, there was an advertisement that included Steve Buckhance, who's a very lovely 50-something-year-old man, right?
He's probably in his 60s
In his 60s.
Now,
totally shirtless and flexing. And I don't remember what the ad was
for. This is like having Alan or I in there, which we would not do.
I don't recall a single thing that's ever been in one of these Wizards magazines, but except I will that. Always remember Steve Buckhance shirtless, flexing, with a tie around his neck and the button down all the way over to the side, full frontal. So,
yeah.
Exciting stuff.
How the abs look.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
So he's
dagger!
He's now a Woff. Jaime Moreno, who is a soccer player
DC
of
United.
Consequence,
DC United, that's right.
When they used to win championships. Eleni Racidas, whose work I'm not familiar with.
She's a little with the tennis locally, I believe.
Okay, Buddy Meyer, whose work I'm not familiar with. Alan, are these familiar names to you growing up here? And the most deserving person in the class, the one that makes me the happiest, Marty Aronoff. The great statistician, Marty Aronoff, who has compiled more numbers for more games than anyone in the world and logged more miles to get there. I'm thrilled for him, aren't you?
He's great.
He's great. Marty Aronoff is great.
They should
good
put Katie Ledecky in today.
Katie Ledecky was in last year.
She's already in?
Yes. You took the year off to travel.
With Tony.
You took the year off to travel.
I know you were in last year.
With Katie.
And yes. Wilbon was a few... early on.
Wilbon was early on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, Wilbon was one and done, basically. He got in so quickly.
This wall, though, sadly, is now overshadowed by a big Geico ad at Nats Park.
We have to take that down.
Moved down to the other side of the parking garage.
We're in the left... We're in the left hand.
We need to blow up those parking garages.
Maybe we can put a chatter ad in place of the
Luke's
Geico
favorite
ad.
Moment in Nats history is now off of the wall, right? The Jason Worth home run.
Can I go on a quick rant about that?
Sure.
Okay.
Teed him up.
The Jason Worth home run.
I was there.
I was there too. 2012, game four over the Cardinals. Long, it was like 28 pitch at bat. Tremendous. Great. You lost the series.
They always lose
you
the series.
You lost the series.
Right.
Now, the argument is that, well, that was the first great Nationals playoff moment. Who cares? Who cares?
It's John Wall, the hero of game six.
And
six
I'm
right.
over that.
Yeah.
And I'm over it. Yeah. And in that, what do we call it? A poster? I don't know. This large painting? Whatever the heck
billboard.
It was. Billboard, okay?
Oh, you don't want that.
No, it was on the frickin' stadium for 5 years. Get it off. Get it off. Why are we celebrating mediocrity?
We celebrating that particular win, which gave a lot of people hope until game
until
five.
Until it was crushed. Brutally.
Until it was crushed.
Until,
yes.
until the ninth inning.
Until seven relievers could not get anybody
by
out.
By Drew Storm.
Up 6-0.
Our man Drew.
Yeah,
our man Drew.
Out. What else do you have for news?
By the way, Blake Treinen is not on the WAF, is
no,
he?
No, he's not. He's not a WAF.
Not yet. Not this year.
Not,
how has
no.
your year been as a member of the WAF? Did you go on like a tour?
I guess I feel like Miss America. Yeah, that you know, that I've won scholarship money and then now I'm done. If invited to attend the ceremony.
Oh, you would gladly go.
Yes, I would.
It was a lovely
like the
ceremony.
Heisman winners, they can go to
I
the,
would.
Yeah,
I mean,
cool.
I don't know if you get invited, but I would certainly congratulate Marty. Is and it? Buckhands, too. And I mean, I know some of the people. But Marty, that's thrilling
yes.
to me.
Yes, it's fantastic.
It's thrilling to me.
Is it like the Heisman house? Is there like a Waff
yeah.
house? You know, like they have that ad?
I don't know. I don't know. As long as there's not a Waffle House.
By the way, isn't there a Hof Waff special today for breakfast? Yes, Hof
yes,
Waffles.
Yes, Hof Waff special, Hof
yes.
Waffles.
So come on in for those. Walmart is pulling Cosmopolitan.
We can't say come on in those for those because this drops at 11 o'clock and breakfast is over.
Come and get some late breakfast.
Yeah, okay.
Some late breakfast.
Yeah.
Walmart is pulling Cosmopolitan from the checkout aisles of its 5,000 stores after years of pressure from
it's
an activist group.
Cosmopolitan?
Yeah, that
Why?
Accuses the publication of being hypersexualized and degrading. This is coming from the
what?
National Center on Sexual Exploitation.
What?
Yeah.
Cosmo.
Yes.
What do you think made Walmart now realize this?
Yeah.
But
they're still selling all of the tabloids, aren't they? They sell all the tabloids.
Yes,
they
I believe
sell Maxim and FHM and
National Enquirer and all that kind of stuff. Yes.
Well, we're all the rage when Michael and I were 14.
Can
and
I say that
Wi-Fi?
National Enquirer. They get it right.
They do get it right, yes.
They get it right.
They do tend to get it right,
yeah,
yes.
They do.
So, yes, I guess Cosmopolitan has all these, you know, columns about what you need to do in bed and all these sorts of things. And how,
you know what?
I'm sort
just
of surprised.
Stop.
I'm
yeah.
surprised
just, you know
at
what?
That.
Every kid with an iPhone can have the total exploration of the universe now. Pulling a Cosmopolitan from Walmart is not going to allow little Johnny to grow up in a world without sex. Just stop it. Seriously, just stop it.
Reverend Luke.
I'll make a full bluster.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Evangelicals don't care about Stormy, so why are you pulling Cosmo?
Do you have the news on the VA doctor? Do you have
I didn't have that one, but there was it's basically...
Donald Trump has appointed the presidential doctor.
The presidential doctor who has no experience in management or running anything. Apparently he's quite a good doctor.
Wait, what did he do? He said the president was 239 pounds. That got him the job.
Right. That has to be it, right?
Yeah, tape. 239, you got the job.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Donald Trump appoints people he knows and people he watches on TV, which is why I said to Aldridge the other day, you could be the Secretary of Commerce. If Trump liked the NBA,
right.
He would go, whoa, that David Aldridge on Turner, he's pretty good. Yeah. How'd you like to be Secretary of Commerce?
Tune in next week on Trump to see what he does
very
next.
Possible.
Roseanne did very well. The reboot, we talked about this briefly yesterday.
I never watched it.
I was not a fan of this either, but apparently people were very excited for the two-episode premiere, attracted 18.2 million
That's
viewers.
That's tremendous for a television series.
Right.
That's tremendous.
That's the ABC's best results for an hour-long telecast since the fall of 2006.
This is tremendous. With all of the things you can watch now, to actually watch... one show on network television. This is like when the other night, the interview with Stormy Daniels on 60 Minutes drew 22 million people.
Yeah.
These are NFL playoff numbers.
Yeah.
And that's what people want.
It's very smart the way they've marketed it in the sense of tying Roseanne to Trump, because there is a very fervent part of the population which is going to support that and back it. And people say, were you ever surprised by how well Black Panther did in the theaters? I said, no, because that was marketed in such a cultural way that it became an identity film.
Have
this
to go.
An identity show.
Yeah.
Red State America, we got to support Roseanne. It's a genius way of getting it out there. I wish they had new shows on, though.
Yeah,
all
it would be
these
nice
reboots are ridiculous.
Yeah, a little bit of creativity would be nice.
Well, this gives the space Goodman, who died in the last episode, is now back.
Right.
This gives the space for Listen Up to come back in 2019.
It absolutely so great. Does. By the way, can I make a plug for a show I just watched? It premiered this past Sunday.
Sure.
It's called Barry. Not about Barry's Verluga. It's with John Hader, I think is the guy's name.
Yeah.
He plays a hitman who decides to get into acting. And it's just, that's the premise, but it's very good.
He's pretty funny. He was on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, he's very fun. Yeah.
And he's been off for 5 years, but people still think he's on the show.
Exactly. Exactly. So there you go.
Well, you know, but because in such an odd way, you can go binge watch anything in the world, and so he's on the show. I mean, if you just watched it last week, this never used to be possible.
But he gave an interview where he said the hardest thing for him is that people still come up and say, oh, I saw how's SNL?
I saw you last week.
I haven't been on for 5 years.
People still come up to me and say, I love your columns in the Post. I haven't written in 20 years. It's true. I love your columns. And I go, thanks. What am I going to say? I don't correct him.
Did you like what I wrote this past week?
Thank you.
I loved your stuff towards the end of your print career, where it was like your picture and five bullet points.
That was the
greatest
columnettes.
The columnette years.
I hope you got Rick Riley money for that.
I got
that was great.
No, much like this restaurant, I didn't. I will take a break. We will come back with
Old Guy Radio.
Yes.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the First Leaf ad. This is the Wine Tyrant is not here.
Liz, tune out.
The Wine Tyrant is not here.
But be kind, because you are traveling with her.
I know, and I love her, and I do, and I've set aside bottles of wine for Kate, because that's part of the deal.
Not gas station wine.
No. First Leaf wine is
gas station
what wine. We need to do, when we've admitted this the last time. We need to rate the wine. That's important.
Because that's going to get you
better
results.
Because as they would say, help us help you.
Yes.
Because they send you the wine, you rate the wine. If you say, you know, I don't like this, you never see this again. If you say, I like this, they give you that and things more like it. You just narrow the grid of your likes. First Leaf is the only online wine club that uses your reviews to make personalized wine selections match to your taste. The more you tell First Leaf what you like, the better they can customize each new box you receive. Okay, keep yelling. First Leaf makes tasting and rating new wine an exciting event. The more this is an important deal. The better they can customize your wine because of what you tell them. You get an introductory 3-pack of wine for just $5 a bottle. That's $15 total. And from that point on, it's more expensive, but it's, you know, it's...
It's tailored to you.
What's the word where you... Not collated. What is the word... Where they tailor it to you and it's...
Custom?
No, it's another word. I'll think of the word later. Customize your First Leaf box by selecting the color, wine region...
Curated.
Thank you. Curated. English major. Customize your First Leaf box by selecting the color, wine regions, and frequency of your wine shipments. First Leaf then creates an introductory 3-pack of wine just to get you started. With the introductory pack, you'll get all three for just $5 each. Normally, these bottles of wine go for $20 a piece, if not more. And when your bottles arrive, and this is important, and I haven't done it, rate the wine to get personalized selections based on your unique taste. To order a 3-pack of introductory wine for only $15, go to tryfirstleaf.com/Tony. That's three wines for only $15 on your first order at tryfirstleaf.com/Tony. Experience First Leaf today at tryfirstleaf.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Vangelis.
That's right.
Who's celebrating a birthday?
75th birthday today.
So this is Chariots of Fire. And this is the scene where they're running on the beach. And is it called Land's End? Is that what it's called in England?
I always get this wrong.
I get it wrong, too.
Since I'm from there, I should know this,
yes.
But I don't.
Whatever it is... I've always thought that this has nothing to do with the music. The music is stirring to me. But I've always thought that Chariots of Fire is, if not the greatest sports movie ever made, in the top three. Now, mine is a minority view. Mr. 3000? No.
Okay.
A lot of people put the Robert De Niro movie about Jake LaMotta, Raging Bull.
Sure.
A lot of people put Hoosiers there. Mm-hmm. A lot of people...
The Natural, something like
that. The Natural is a great, great
movie. Angels in the Outfield.
Not Angels in the Outfield.
Rudy.
Not, certainly not Rudy. Certainly not Rudy.
Fever Pitch.
Fever Pitch. Terrible.
Dreadful
a lot of them are, you know, not that good. But, okay, what's your favorite sports movie?
Oh, don't put me on the spot. It's going to be a bad golf movie.
Oh, it would be?
Like Tin Cup.
Caddyshack.
Tin Cup's a great movie.
Tin Cup and Bull Durham... are the Ron Shelton movies, and they're very funny.
Yeah, they're great.
White Men Can't Jump is a sports movie, and it's very funny. I tend to look at the more dramatic ones. For a while, everybody thought it was Rocky. Rocky has sort of lost favor. I don't know why. Because when Rocky came out,
it was fantastic. Yeah.
I mean, you'd never... That like we
there's so many of them.
You talked earlier in the show talk earlier in the show about, like, Luke, you were saying, why do they reboot series? Why, right. You know, why don't you have something new? Rocky was new when it came out.
But then there are so many, and I think part of the problem with Rocky is that, especially our generation, we forget which one is which.
That's
it's
right.
Like, is he fighting the Russian? Is it Apollo Creed 1 or 2?
Yeah.
He did in the Cold War, Luke. I think you need to remember
Tommy
that.
Jones or Tommy Morrison? Is that the
that's,
guy?
That's Rocky 5, I believe.
But Creed was great, by the way. I loved
Creed. Yeah,
Creed
was good.
That was very good.
Creed with
Michael
Will Bond and
B.
Kornheiser.
Jordan.
That's right.
Yeah.
I met him.
Uh-huh.
He was very, very pleasant. He was in the PTI studios actually being interviewed for one of the other shows. Not we, because we didn't know to put him on. We just felt that that wasn't exactly what we do. But he was
so fans of The Wire, which I think is the greatest television show in the history of television.
You and Jason
shows.
Whitlock.
He plays this character Wallace, a young kid who gets shot and killed. And yeah. I didn't place it until I actually was watching him in Creed for a while.
And you're
said,
like, oh,
wow, Wallace has grown up.
Yeah.
Wallace
he's
is
a fantastic
made.
Actor.
What do you think was the highest grossing sports movie of all time?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
I would guess with rights
Rocky.
And Rocky. Exactly.
Rocky with everything that came after Rocky. People, sports movies tend to be, well, they...
Losers.
Yeah, but they also tend to be about boxing or horse racing. There have been a lot of boxing and horse racing movies, some of which have been
that?
Very good.
The one about Seabiscuit. That
yeah,
was
it's very good.
Good.
So we have
that
a list. Good. Highest grossing sports films. Number one, The Blind Side. Number
what?
Two,
whoa. Wow.
The Waterboy, which is not really a sports movie.
Adam
number
Sandler.
Three, The Longest Yard.
The remake.
Point. Yeah. Life.
Sorry, that's me.
Yeah.
And we have number four, Talladega Nights. Again, not
oh
really a sports
God.
Movie.
That's pretty funny, though. I have to concede
now,
that's
here,
pretty
here
funny.
Here are the Rockies. Rocky 4, Rocky 3, and 5, and 6. Seabiscuit at 7. Blades of Glory, 8.
That was funny, too.
Remember the Titans, 9.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Unbroken at 10.
That's yeah. not a sports
Unbroken
movie.
Unbroken is a war movie, isn't it?
Well, he ran, though. There's at least a scene
war.
Where he's running in the Olympics.
So you know what was a really good movie was Moneyball.
Moneyball
that's
was a good
sports movie.
Movie,
and it's yeah. a really good movie. You know.
Now, do you like something like some of the older things, like Pride of the Yankees? Do you like that? Does
no,
that
no, fine. It's fine.
Or,
I mean,
or Bang
some of those
the Drum
movies,
Slowly. Or
Bang like the Drum Slowly was good.
Right.
De Niro was in that, too. That was a good movie. Yeah.
Just a final word about Vangelis. That did win the Academy Award for Best Original Music Score.
Yeah.
And when he talked about it, they were like, you didn't use period music, and because he used very modern music for something that was set in 1924. And he said, the main inspiration was the story itself. The rest I did instinctively without thinking about anything else other than express my feelings with the technological means available to me at the time.
It's fabulous.
And
it's a fabulous
works.
Scene. It's a
yeah,
great
and it's
scene.
Become
have
sort
you
of,
seen that?
Well,
have
it's
you
been
seen
so parodied
too young.
Now.
You
yeah,
guys are
yeah,
both
like,
too
it was
young.
An old school. It was parodied in old school.
Oh, yeah. No.
When they're doing the
Revenge
gymnastics
of the Nerds.
You're
yeah.
too young. For
I am too young.
You didn't have you seen it? Have you seen Chariots of Fire?
I've seen Chariots of Fire.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, no, that was a funny story about that. The late great Blockbuster Video down on Connecticut Avenue in Cleveland Park that was next to Herman Sports, which became a Petco, which have both now closed. But there used yeah. to be a Blockbuster Video there. And this is where I sort of have the dividing line. Michael and I are millennials, but we are millennials who remember getting to Blockbuster. You had to get to Blockbuster on Friday morning or all the good stuff was gone.
Right.
You had to get there on Thursday night. I would complain to my parents before the weekend, we got to go there Thursday night because those goons are going to take it all. So I was in Blockbuster, and the film I wanted to see was Taken. You know, they used to have the video
not tape. The movie Taken.
No, this
actually,
is videotape. This is
yeah.
not even DVD we're talking. We're talking VHS.
On the wall.
VHS was taken of the movie I wanted to see, and I was sort of moping around, and my mom goes, well, there's Chariots of Fire. I go, what? Yeah, there's Chariots of Fire. She goes, you haven't seen it? I said, Mom, I'm 12. How would I have seen
it's
it?
It's great.
She goes, well, you have to see it.
Yeah.
So she took it, and I was very upset. I said, oh, I want to go get some other stupid Adam Sandler movie or something, and I watched it, and yeah, just tear it up.
It's great.
12.
It's
yeah.
great.
Oh, it's
this
is the
same
way.
The Adam Sandler movies in the top 10?
Yeah. This is the same way I ended up seeing All the President's Men. What I wanted to see was taken out,
right.
So I found my way into that movie.
Which is a great
yeah.
movie.
Great film.
These seem like they were just released yesterday to me, but they were released 30 and 40
I was
years
driving
ago.
In Connecticut 2 years ago, and I saw a Blockbuster Video, and I had to pull over to the side of the road to take a photograph. There are still a few alive.
They're all gone now, right?
Are they all gone? The late, great Wayne Huizenga just passed away, so R.I.P.
I thought they were all gone. Wayne Huizenga
yeah,
founded three different Fortune
Waste
500.
Management, right?
Yeah.
And then Blockbuster, and then what was the other one?
AutoNation.
AutoNation.
Oh,
Big time.
Auto Nation.
Like, bought the 1997 World Series and then said it because I lost $34 million a year. He fire sale. That's
tanked.
The original.
But you know, his, fire sale. His great regret was not winning with the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Because that's all he wanted to do was win with the Dolphins.
Not to countermand what Michael was saying, but adjusted for inflation, Rocky does become the highest grossing sports movie.
Oh, yeah, because in those days it was $2 to get into the movie,
right.
And now it's $10.
And it's Rocky.
It did win Best Picture.
Rocky 3 and Rocky 4, a 1-2-3 position. I don't know why Rocky 2 didn't make it. That's down at number 8. Heaven Can Wait, which was also sort of an underrated movie.
Good movie.
Warren Beatty.
Good movie. Yeah. Funny movie.
Funny movie, yeah. Played Rams. For the Rams, that's right.
Played
yeah.
for the Rams.
I don't trust your reporting.
Nor should you.
No, that's a funny movie. Heaven Can Wait's funny. I mean...
No, I don't trust Nigel's reporting of this list.
No, that's fair. All right. So we have the big thing this weekend is the Final Four.
Yes.
We were going to have Pat Forte on. We cannot connect with Pat.
Yeah.
We were going to ask Pat a bunch of questions about the Final Four. But we have the socialite, who is, you know, pretty much the same as Pat Forte.
Essentially.
As far as I'm concerned.
Forte's afraid of baby boy Bootsy taking the title.
That's right. We should fill people in on that. Yeah,
go ahead.
If Villanova wins, Pat Forte wins the bigs bracket pool. But if Kansas wins, baby boy Bootsy in his first tournament bracket contest will emerge as the
victor. Well, he watched a lot of college basketball this year. There wasn't much else he could do.
Yeah. So we have the first game, I assume, because it's not going to be as more people will be interested in the Loyola Chicago game,
sure.
But it's not probably not as good a game. So let's go around the room. Who wins, Loyola Chicago or Michigan?
I think Michigan wins. I mean, they're on fire right now. They've lost, one game in the last 15. And I really like Beilein. I mean, I think that he's an incredible coach that is extremely underrated. He's never really brought up in those conversations of the top coaches in the country, even though he's been to the Final Four three times out of the last 6 years, or he's gotten very far. So I think Michigan wins. And I actually think that if they can continue on this streak, it's their year. They can win it all.
So I'm trying to protect my son's chance to win the overall bracket. So I'm going with Loyola. And I'm coming back to what
Sister
you've
Jean.
Noticed for this entire tournament, which is just how well they're coached
and how
they manage the ball offensively
and how
they share the ball.
They're really good. They haven't to this point panicked. Who do you like, Alan?
You know, as much as I'd like to pick Loyola, I think Michigan's going to win. They are the hot team. This shot against Houston, they should be out, has spurred them on. They've played great for 2 months, and they're just going to, I think, keep going. And I think they could give a great shot in the championship.
The first question I was going to ask Pat Forte was, what is the most surprising team in the tournament? And I assume he would have said Loyola. But I would have said Michigan. They were out. They could not win. The kid had to miss 2 free throws. They had to rebound it. They had to get it down the court in, 2.8 seconds or something like that. And the kid Poole throws up a shot. He can't even see the basket as he's shooting it.
Right.
They're out. I mean, Loyola should have been out once or twice, too. But Michigan is totally out. You know, when you talk about how hot they are, totally out of the tournament. Can't be in the tournament. And they're in.
They're in.
You know, what about the other game? What about Villanova, Kansas? Those are ones.
I'm going to go with the upset there. I like Kansas.
Kansas?
I do. Everybody is picking Villanova. It just seems too easy. Villanova did not play great against Duke, even though it was a...
Couldn't shoot at all.
Could not.
Had open shots, couldn't knock any shot down.
I'm sorry, against the...
Texas Tech.
Texas Tech
was terrible.
Yeah, but
terrible.
Villanova was 4-for-24 from 3. They weren't good. I think Kansas looks really good.
When you have these big-time matchups of the top seeds and the blue bloods, as they call them, I tend to go with the coaching more than the talent. I think Villanova is more talented, but I think...
Can you separate those two coaches? Do you?
I put Self a little higher.
Really?
Yeah. Yes, because remember, Villanova was kind of out in the wilderness for a few years there in the Audis, and you know they had a good beginning in the Audis. And then when they lost Sumter, that was the year they should have gone to the Final Four. They beat BC in the Sweet 16 in 2006, if I remember correctly. But Kansas has been sustained success for such a long period of time. And Self is a very, very good coach.
See, I think both those guys have gone out early a number of times. I think you'll find Self's resume, too. He's gone out early.
He has, but he has – does he have one or two?
He's got one.
He's got one.
He's got one.
I just find him to be a better coach. Maybe I'm just infatuated with Rock Chalk Jayhawk. I'm rooting for Nova as a fellow Catholic school alum.
Yeah.
And I like Jay Wright. He's best dressed man in the land.
He's
a very, very good looking man. He could be a
looks like George Clooney.
Could be a senior Circuit Armani model.
Yeah. I just want to see his button unbuttoned one time.
Yeah. I'm rooting for Kansas, even though I had them out in the first round against Penn. And I think you'll see in the first 5 minutes, if they can establish the three, I think they'll create some separation with the entire game.
Yeah, I mean, I look forward to both of the games. Final fours tend not to be very good after tournaments that have been very good. Every once in a while, though, you get like the great final, like Villanova, North Carolina. Every once in a while, you get that. Don't get it all the time.
One thing that bugs me is I hate the dome. I hate hard the basketball shoot in the dome. It screws up the depth perception. I don't like how it looks on TV. And they say, well, it's because we want to give more people the opportunity to come. That's BS. No, it's not.
It's not
the NCAA needs to serve beer, number one, and then put it in arena. Put it in a normal 20,000-seat arena. And if you're worried about making up the cost difference, just charge more for the tickets. Don't say that you have it in a dome to accommodate the students who want to go. That's just BS. You're just trying to make it a large-scale, you know, volume game.
What is so great about Luke is that everything he goes to, he can always identify a bar.
Oh, absolutely.
Nearby.
That's right. That's a veteran.
All of his
that
issues seem to be beer
and
issues.
And on a subsequent point, Michael and I were talking about this. There's a $16 can now of craft beer at Nats Park.
That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
$16?
And I reported that, and the Nationals came back and said, well, that's just this one special 25-ounce can. But the vendor told me it was a 16-ounce can when I was there at the exhibition game. So, fellow Nats fans, we have to get to the bottom of what are the beer prices at Nats Park.
It's essential.
We don't know yet. We're being led astray.
Do you know the socialite in his positions?
He doesn't have to pay. He doesn't have to pay for
it. But in his positions as part of the sports commission in the District of Columbia, you might be responsible for the high-end pricing of what may be either a 25 or 16-ounce can.
The Nats control all that.
They do all that?
They do all that. They control. But I do think in their defense, that's what people were talking about the other night. You know, a Bud Light is now $15 from 11 or 9. I think it's just one craft beer.
No, it's going to be interesting to see.
I think the regular beers are
question,
the same prices.
As a concerned Washingtonian, all those cranes out in left field, are they going to be there for the All-Star game?
It sure appears that way, unless the buildings are finished.
That looks really bad.
Lucas, totally on a roll.
It's not like we knew the All-Star game was coming.
Let's get out of here. Right, it snuck up
on
us, the
All-Star
game.
No, they haven't had those canes for the last few seasons.
And the Red Sox, July 4th weekend.
Hurricanes. Can I give you a quick tease about your holiday weekend with my in-laws?
Yeah.
So what holiday starts this Friday for us?
Passover.
So my in-laws have been talking with the wine tyrant, trying to make sure that you feel comfortable in their home.
Right.
So Chan is going out to purchase matzah. But he doesn't quite know how to set up a Seder or what to serve it with.
Right.
Do they have that in South Carolina?
He's going to serve matzah.
With mayonnaise?
Essentially.
As
an hors d'oeuvre with cheddar cheese.
That's just how lovely. So great. the melting pot of cultures in America.
Just wait till Easter brunch.
Yeah. We'll get out of here and we will have email.
Yes. And a jingle,
and jingle
I
when we return.
From Kirsten Ohnstadt.
Kirsten Ohnstadt when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Sifting through our prize box, I can't find a tidy gift to you. Quickly, I find out a burglar's been in this room. Peter Jennings, he's been so the one who donates tithes. Now they lost the whole box and we can't find
this
them.
This is great.
Where are the tithes? Check the tape and we'll catch you. There'll be justice. Just sharpen the knife. Just sharpen the knife. Where are the tithes? Who steals tithes?
That's a good question.
Kirsten Ohnstadt. It's brilliant. It's wonderful. She's
fantastic.
Such a great singer.
She really is.
Now, people are sending us boxes of ties. Now we are giving out ties all the time.
Yes.
Makes me happy. Before we get to the mailbag, let me say thanks to Luke and to the Socialite for showing up today and sitting in, and to Mike Freeman of Bleacher Report for calling in. Thank the sponsors, Blue Apron and First Leaf Wine. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave a review. From Jordan in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. As a Canadian and former jacket salesman, I think I'm qualified to explain the difference between a Patagonia jacket and a Canada Goose jacket in terms even you will understand. Canada Goose jackets are most often worn by people like Chris Lace Saliza, who buy the jacket fancying themselves to be the type of people who will one
and
day...
And every preppy white girl in America.
One day travel to Antarctica, but who will only ever see the inside of a Starbucks. On the other hand, Patagonia jackets will most often be spotted on young 30-something people like Michael, while driving their perfect little family, likely adorned in Patagonia attire as well.
And a Subaru.
In nothing other than a Subaru, because, of course, they care about the environment more than you do. Hope that helps clear the air. Brilliant email. Roy Mathewson, Colorado Springs, Colorado. My favorite episodes feature Abby Lowell. They're informative, and I always feel smarter afterwards. In light of recent events, please invite me on and ask the following questions in no particular order. Do you have a heated toilet seat? How's the food? Have you talked to anyone other than your client since you've been there? How's your bracket? How do you feel about Shark Week?
The heated toilets in Asia are incredible.
From Brandon Steenburgen in Seattle, Washington. I'm a little late to the party on this, but I've been listening to the emails from listeners who nominated the cat email as the funniest email ever read on the show. I've always intended to put a few greatest hits together on a CD for my dad to listen to. He does occasionally listen, but his podcast challenged, so I was going to give a few good segments for him to listen to, such as Tony Buys a Toaster or Tony Rants About People Who Want to Give Out Apple Slices. Me, being the consummate nerd that I am, I went to my list of items and looked at the dates, titles, and notes that I've bookmarked for CD burn, and lo and behold, March 27, 2014, segment 2, end of show, Tony laughs about cat pictures on Twitter. March 28th, 2014, segment 1, beginning of show. Tony is still laughing about cat pictures on Twitter. Thank you, Brad. From Rocky Rakovic in Jersey City, before you leave for spring break, I'm going to slip in the best annual Littles bracket, like Liz Clark sneaking citrus into a Winter Olympic event. Here's the top 20. Straight Cash, Stormy, Heating Up Like Sands' Bottom, Better Call Gasol, I Have a Bracket, sung to the tune of I Have a Piano, This Is Great, Dunkirk Cousins, I Kind of Like Saliza, Uranus Is a Gas Giant, This Is a For-Profit Bracket, Hornaday on Her Own Day, Bill Self-Addressed Stamped Envelope, You Say Tomato, I Say Deer Food, Jeannie's Bacon and Egg Xavier, 16th Seated Rye, The Fish Man Cometh, it's great. Does the NIT grow up to be the NCAA's Still Upper Lipscomb, Johnny Owen 67, 50 Shades of Grace and Allen, Silk Ties for Sale, 2 for $10, and Stop the Yammering. From Ian Frank, Ms. McManus has informed us that she survived swimming and eating fish out of the Potomac. For those of us who are out of market for News Channel 8, can someone please confirm that Ms. McManus has not grown an extra appendage or developed a healthy green glow as a result of our exposure to the river? From Jason Jones in Millersville, Maryland, please forward me all of your Monopoly tickets. That's it. That's all I've got. Forward them. Here. Take them.
Yes.
Send them. Yes. What's it? Ray Matta in Houston, Texas. First time, long time. On Tuesday's show, you read an email from a little Jeff Martin. His email simply asked for you to sign his toaster, which left the gang confused. I believe Mr. Martin meant this as a reference to the infamous Clay Thompson toaster signing from 2017. Thompson was asked by a fan to sign a toaster, which resulted in this wonderful picture of a puzzled Clay staring at a toaster, and he ended up signing it. After the incident went viral, the Warriors subsequently finished the season 31-2 and won the NBA championship. So I need to sign the toaster, apparently, because...
That will put somebody in a win streak?
Yeah, it might be the key to finding the last Monopoly piece.
Well, there you go.
From Ken Fuson in Des Moines, Iowa, Kirkjian adds sweet potatoes to his avocado diet. Potomac fish, Tory names are Kiwi. Tony talks about Stormy. The Post picks the Nats. Chakra, and to top it off, we get the immortal brown-eyed girl. Best no-show ever. Yeah, we had no show, really. From Eric in Mifflinburg, Pennsylvania. I've listened to your show since the 1990s. I've listened to thousands of podcasts over the years, and I can say that I've never heard anyone talk about rabbits with severed heads. And after yesterday's show, I've now heard Tori Clark talk about a gardening episode with a severed head rabbit, and now a severed head rabbit dropping from the sky. I'm not sure exactly what this means, but you should watch out. Scott Lambrecht in Minneapolis. This may not rise to the level of being mailbag worthy, but in case it's a slow day, I'd like to point out that March 29th is the one-year anniversary of the nickname Lace Saliza, The coining of that term is one of my proudest accomplishments. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
What a waste of time.
Walking down the road, I saw a guy I used to know, but he said it's not the same. And there's a girl to blame for all of his heart's mistakes. And then he turned away. He said, find a girl that never fails to leave you breathless, one that leaves you gasping there for more. And I don't wanna be, wanna be anymore. And I just wanna love I can't adore. Whoa, she was looking back at me right there on a city street, but I just walked away. She said it's my mistakes for all of her hearts to break. And I don't know what to say. She said, find a girl that never fails to leave you breathless, one that leaves you gasping there for more. I don't wanna be, wanna be anymore. I just wanna love I can't adore. Whoa. And don't mind a thing they're telling you, every little thing that you can do, make it right. Hide out inside your home, even if it means alone. Just make it through the night. Find a girl that never fails to leave you breathless, one that leaves you gasping there for more. I know I don't wanna be, wanna be anymore. And I just wanna love I can't adore. Oh.